Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest episode of Life on Planet Porky. And of course, I am not the only occupant of Planet Porky. Also coexisting here is, of course, a rock chick extraordinaire writer, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Ms. Jones, how is life treating you this fine day?
You know, good enough, Mike. I think everybody's a little bit fed up now this time around, aren't they, with the lockdown? Because the weather isn't good. We can't all pile out in the back garden and have barbecues and go walking around the park. And I think people are fed up now.
Yeah, I think they're terribly fed up. And that means that we've got to think about compliance now. Now, as you and I are recording, we've only just sort of learned that something which you kind of predicted was going to happen is probably going to happen. And that is if we get 5 days lift of all lockdowns over Christmas, so pubs can stay open until one in the morning and loads of people can mix with the members of their family, no restriction on the number of people in the house. The price to pay will be that for every day of that over Christmas, 5 days, you pay a penalty of 5 days lockdown in January. So most of January would be locked down. On that basis, Miss Jones, I mean, I don't like lockdowns. I don't think they work. But if that's going to happen, I say scrap Christmas.
Yeah, you know, it's been an argument raging for a while, hasn't it? We live in a largely secular country.
Yep.
Most people are not religious. And for Christians, Christmas will happen whether we have a shopping and a feast fest or not.
Yep.
It'll still take place because Christmas is still celebrating the birth of Christ. It's not about eating quality streets and, you know, ripping tinsel and paper. Well, but that's not the meaning of Christmas.
No, I know. The only time in the year now I eat chocolates out of the Roses chocolate tin or the whatever the other ones are called is Christmas, because since I got diabetes too, I've cut out all sugar. But I allow myself a few chockies on Christmas Day and Boxing Day. That will have to be foregone this year. But I'm serious about scrapping Christmas. I mean, Christmas has only ever meant to me a couple of days getting together with the family, big Christmas lunch, loads of booze, and then I always wanted to get back to work by the 27th. This year, I will just stay at home. Literally, I'll get myself a chicken, I'll put up a few decorations in the house, drink a bit of wine, and then wake up on Boxing Day and get on with life.
So what are you really saying? What does Christmas mean to you in that case?
Well, Christmas means to me the ability to get together with the family over the years. That's what it's always meant. We all have busy lives. We all lived in different parts of the country. And suddenly, you know, it was a great thrill driving down to Bournemouth, you know, which is where one of our family houses is. And, you know, with all the presents loaded in the car and getting there and unloading them and having a few drinks on Christmas Eve and then getting one Christmas Day. There's something really great about Christmas Day. An early visit to the pub, you know, a country pub, and people are ever so nice and kind on Christmas Day in a way they're not, you know, on other days of the year. It's a special day, and I like that special day. I like, you know, the feeling of humanity coming together, really. Everybody's forgiving on Christmas Day. But if the price to pay for that is lockdown January, forget it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, all those activities you've just described
could
take place on any day of the year. It doesn't have to be the 25th of December.
You see, the great irony of it all is that I love Christmas Day because the world had shut down for a day. That's why I quite like Sundays. And I would vote against an extension of any shopping hours on the Sundays, because I want Sundays to be the one special day a week when the world sort of closes down for a bit. You know what I mean? I like that break from the routine and the pressure of working. But now I hate quiet days because I associate quiet days now with economic gloom and doom and lockdown. And so I am fed up to the back teeth with quiet days.
Oh, of course. I mean, Sundays during our childhood was a day of rest.
We
could go to church.
Yeah.
Some people did play football early on a Sunday morning, but you didn't go to shopping centres. They weren't open. Shopping centres.
That's right.
You had the Sunday lunch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody got together. So I really don't see the difference between a classic Sunday and a Christmas Day if you're not inclined to go to church and celebrate the birth of Jesus.
No, I remember those Sundays so well. Myself and my two little sisters, we used to have to walk about 2 miles just to find a sweet shop on a Sunday, you know what I mean? To be able to get some sweets, because all the local shops were closed and it was very unusual to find a shop open. But I liked it like that. I liked the roads to be lacking in noise. And I've read in the last few days some mad proposal that the next bank holiday we get, we'll make it a 4-day bank holiday. What for? Every day's like a bank holiday at the moment.
Well, and everybody's out of work as it is. I mean,
yeah, no, yeah.
I don't predict that we'll get back to normal for a good 18 months.
No, I think you could be right. I mean, you know, I really hate the doomsters and the gloomsters, and I want the Boris bounce effect, which seems to have disappeared as well. And I want to be thinking positively, and I want to get going. I want business to pick up. I want British Airways to start flying to New York again, so I can actually get on one and go there, you know, before I die. And I need all that to come. No, I don't know what you're laughing at. I mean, I could die.
You're not going to die yet. No, you're not going to die yet.
Good. Who knows? You know, anybody could die anytime.
Well, that's true. But don't you think Boris looks ill?
Not particularly. I thought he, I mean, I don't study his face necessarily, but I just think he looks rather pathetic at the moment, because I think he's lost his grip on life. I think other people are now dictating what happens in the government and what happens in Boris's life.
Well, question. You know, we've seen the back of Dominic Cummings et al.
Yeah.
Why did we need those advisers in the first place? Isn't that what ministers are for?
Yeah, but that argument never goes away. Oh, you know, you've got civil servants. I think there's something like 40,000 civil servants in Whitehall, but they still go around hiring people on £7,000 a day to advise them. It's pathetic. The whole of government's pathetic. I believe in small government, and people just want bigger and bigger and bigger government. But the Dominic Cummings thing, it comes from two angles. Well, one point of view says, well, hang on, he got Boris into Downing Street, he got Brexit done, he kept us out the euro, the man's a genius. And people say, what will it all become now? You see, what I'm worried about, Leslie-Ann, is that the government will now be gripped by the sort of Oxbridge mob again, you know, the David Cameron-type mob, who simply don't have a clue what's happening in the north of England, which at least Cummings did have.
In which case, why are the likes of Cameron and Johnson voted prime minister in the first place?
Because of the old boys' network. Conservatism with a small c is still a basic principle of many people in this country, including what you would call the working classes, who like to look after themselves, stand on their own two feet. The party that represents those values is the Tories, but unfortunately, the Tories always seem to vote in somebody like Boris Fifield Johnson and David Cameron to lead them. And it's in my view, it's a misrepresentation. Mrs. Thatcher was a grammar school girl.
Exactly. But I find it quite worrying that the media are pouring crap all over Carrie Simmons.
Yeah.
Or having whispered in Boris's ear. Isn't that the most sexist thing you've heard so far?
Well, there's definitely an element of sexism in it, because it also, it's not just Carrie, it's a clique of people like his new press secretary, Allegra Stratton, is also a woman. And the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, is a woman. She's said to have loaded on that side as well. Can you still hear me, Ms. Jones?
I can.
Great, OK. And all that sort of thing, you know what I mean? So there is an element of sexism, but at the same time, I don't. You'll have read this story this week, I'm sure. Carrie Simmons apparently texted the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, 25 times in 1 hour because she wanted him to come out of a meeting that was discussing Brexit and help her to complain to the Times about a story which said she didn't like the Downing Street dog. I mean, you know, what?
Well, that sounds a bit made up to me. Where's the proof of this?
Well, look, I just said to you, you probably read the story. I didn't put any validity on the story. But
no,
I mean,
you didn't. But, I mean, who's reporting this rubbish? Who's actually seen those texts?
Well, look, we've been journalists all our life. They clearly had enough belief in what they thought was the facts to have published them with a big headline.
Mm. Yeah, a large dose of salsa with that one.
Well, you know, I don't know. Nobody's ever come back on it. Downing Street haven't commented on it. Anyway, there we go. Look, this is all a bit doomy and gloomy, and I think we should liven things up on Life on Planet Porky. So, Ms. Jones, what do you think about the fact that the Sun are celebrating 50 years of Page 3? I wouldn't have bothered, frankly. It disappeared 2 or 3 years ago and should have been left to history, shouldn't it?
Well, they have tops on now, don't they?
Yeah, well, they do, yeah. But this was 50 years of Page 3 since day one. You know, this was old Samantha Fox and Linda Lusardi and all that.
I think it lost its appeal for the people who found it appealing when they put their bras back on.
Yeah, I think it lost its appeal a long time before that, to be honest. I remember when Stuart Higgins took over as editor of The Sun, right? And that was in about 1993, 94. And I remember meeting him, seeing him just before he got it. Because Mackenzie had been moved on to Sky, and they needed Stuart there because they knew that Tony Blair was going to win the next election, and it wasn't going to be easy for the new Labour government to work with the old Sun editor. So Stuart Higgins got it. Great editor, Stu. But he said to me, I think it was the night before he was appointed, he said, "I'm going to get rid of page three."
Yeah, I remember the same. No, the same thing happened when Rebecca took over, didn't it?
Oh, did it?
And yeah, because a female editor or editor-in-chief, whichever she was at the time, it was expected that she would ban page three, but she didn't. She came up all guns blazing with even more boobs across that page.
I think you're right, yeah. And I think what happened was, certainly what happened to Higgy was, they went and got a focus group report, you know what I mean? And the focus group report came back with the famous conclusion that they talked about all the years in newspapers, didn't they? You know, the Times thinks that members of the House of Lords should run the country. The Daily Mail thinks that people who run industry should run the country. And the Sun thinks that they don't care who runs the country as long as they've got big knockers. And that was actually reflected in all their reader surveys.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I always found it disgusting that truck drivers were ogling over naked 18-year-olds. Every one of those 18-year-olds is somebody's daughter. Yeah. You know, those truck drivers have daughters. Do they ogle over their own daughters? Surely we should be dragging those Neanderthals into the 21st century.
Yeah,
I can see dissuading them from getting their kicks out of looking at pictures of naked teenagers. I think it's disgraceful.
Well, they weren't all teenagers. Some of them were in their sort of early 20s. I mean,
well, it's the same thing, isn't it? They're still somebody's daughter, somebody's granddaughter.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, I'm not going to defend it because I sound like you say, a dinosauric sort of old perv, which I'm not.
You do a bit, yeah.
Sorry?
You do a bit.
No, that's horrible. That's horrible to say that. Look, it was a time and an age, you know, in the 80s. Blimey, it wasn't even commented on. People forget there was another newspaper called the Daily Star, which did exactly the same thing. They just copied it, but
even
much lower
worse.
Quality. Sorry?
Yeah, it was. Even worse, actually, the Daily Star. But I can remember having many conversations with Samantha Fox, whose father, her own father, was her manager.
Yes.
And she turned against him in the end, primarily because he ripped her off of most of her money.
Yeah.
But then she started to say, what kind of father sells his daughter, his own daughter, into the soft porn industry?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
And then she became a lesbian. So that tells you everything.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? It tells you. I mean, she was ripped off by all sorts of men. That master con man who ended up getting involved with the Blairs, buying them property in Bristol. Do you remember? I've forgotten his name now.
I mean, Peter Foster.
Peter Foster, the Australian, absolutely right. Yeah. An international con man. He got involved with Sam Fox and ripped her off and took all the money. So, you're absolutely right. You can hardly blame Sam Fox in the end for turning on men. No, I totally agree. Anyway, not everybody in the world is horrible. And some devastating news this morning. Little Mix could be going solo. We could have four doses of Little Mix instead of just one, Leslie-Anne. What will this do as a revolutionary move in the world of pop and music?
Aren't they just taking a break because Jessie Nelson's going off to have a bit of surgery?
Oh, I don't know. Is she?
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
And so Leanne, Jade and Perry are all sort of sitting around twiddling their thumbs, going, what do we do in the meantime? So it's very common for the members of bands to release solo albums, do a little solo tour, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it spells the end of Little Mix because I think the whole appeal of those four girls is the fact that they are the most successful girl group ever in this country.
I thought the Spice Girls were.
Yeah, I think Little Mix have overtaken them now.
How
many Spice Girls hits can you quote?
Oh, tell me what you want. Tell you what you want, what you really, really want, what you really, really want. I mean, that's the iconic one, isn't it?
The only one we can remember. But Little Mix.
Yes,
yeah, you've got, I don't know, Black Magic, Shout Out to My Ex.
Oh, no, I don't remember.
Woman Like Me, Always Be Together. I think most people know Little Mix hits today. They don't necessarily know.
No, I don't. I wouldn't know one if you blasted it into my left ear and it came out my right ear.
I think you would. Yeah, you would.
Well, I might. But anyway, look, I mustn't be mean because they're very successful. I think they've earned £28 million between them. So good luck to them. I'm up for anybody who takes a punt in life. And they did. They wanted to get into showbiz. They did it. Very successful. So good luck to them. That's what I say.
Now, well, the other thing, of course, the other aspect is that they, you know, it's been full on since they won the X Factor, or maybe didn't win it. Maybe they came second.
I think, yeah.
Who really cares? But it's been full on recording, touring, huge, massive tours all over the world.
Yeah.
And they get to their late 20s and look back and think, actually, we didn't really have our 20s, did we? Yeah. Maybe it's time for us to have some self-time now.
Well, I come off it. I think any girl in the world at 22 would swap roles with any member of Little Mix, wouldn't they? Traveling all over the world, you know, luxurious travel and luxurious hotels, being feted by millions on stage. You know, it's pretty good.
You've never been on tour with the band, have you?
No, we've done a tour of the Two Mics shows, you know, around the country and all that. We didn't get a load of groupies, unfortunately. I was always waiting. I was always, you know, I always said to the other
guys, even topless ones.
Well, certainly not topless ones, no. But I always thought, you know, one of these days, don't worry, we'll finish, we'll come in here, have a few sherbets in the dressing room. Then as we leave by the stage door, there'll be a gang of, you know, 50 or 60, you know, women clamouring for us, but it never happened. I don't know why that is, Leslie Ann. Do you?
I've got no idea, Michael. But you know, I've been on lots of tours with lots of bands, and it is the most grueling lifestyle. Yeah. It is not luxurious. You are trapped in your hotel room. You can't go out for dinner in a nice restaurant. Yeah. It's get up at the crack of dawn and on to the next place, and you never know where you are. You never get time to sightsee, and it really isn't all that it's cracked up to be.
Yeah. Well, you say that. But again, I think it's really a bit sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? A bit sort of lacking in you know, the tremendous opportunity you've been offered to start moaning about the conditions of your job. I mean, the conditions of the job you and I have done have often been appalling. You know, we've travelled to places we didn't want to go, on transport we didn't want to be on. I once travelled across the Atlantic in a Portuguese fishing boat, okay, and the only place I could find to sleep was on top of the fish.
Oh, God, I bet you stank at the end of that.
I did, yeah. No.
God.
Yeah, it was dreadful. What happened was, actually, I'm sure I've told this story before, but it's quite a long time ago. There was a mad bloke who rowed across the Atlantic, okay? His name was Tommy somebody, but he was one of these ex-SAS guys, you know what I mean? And when these ex-SAS guys come out of the SAS, they can't really find anything to do, you know, which satisfies them, except, you know, they like going around sort of beating people up and that sort of stuff, you know what I mean? So he decided to row across the Atlantic single-handed. Can you imagine that? You know, getting into a rowing boat. I mean, it was quite a big rowing boat, obviously. But so he set off from somewhere like Cape Cod, and he was heading for Cornwall, right? But the problem was he wasn't a very good navigator, and he missed Cornwall, and then he started drifting south, and he was going to land in either Porto or some other place in Portugal. I can't remember what the other place was called. Anyway, we had to track him all the time, okay? And then I was told to go out and get him as he approached the port in Portugal. So I had to hire a Portuguese fishing boat, and the catch was still on it, and we spent 2 days at sea looking for this bloke, you know, and never found him. He got to shore before us in eventually because he was a tiny little boat and we missed him.
Did you ever get rid of the smell?
Well, you just throw everything away, you know what I mean? You go back to your hotel, oh, my God, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But it was, that was an horrendous job. You must have had a horrendous jobs like that.
Quite a few that you don't look back on with great relish. But no. I would have to say that I don't think Little Mix are complaining about their lot.
Exactly.
I think they're just having a go at another phase at the moment, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think they're moaning about it. So, I think I must write a book one of these days about what it's really like to be on tour with a rock band.
Great idea. Great idea. But will you have time, Miss Jones? Because you never stop writing these days.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good. Good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Now, what do you think about Nigella Lawson telling us all how to make a piece of toast?
Well, it's not really cooking, is it? I mean, I get what she's saying, the two-layer method, that you get the toast out of the toaster, you whack on some butter before it has a chance to cool down, and then you whack on a second layer before you eat it.
Yes.
I think that only works, by the way, on the thick sort of uncut loaves that you cut great big fat slices out of and can just about wedge them in the toaster. But it doesn't really work with the sliced bread stuff. But, I mean, she's purporting to be a cook. I'm a great fan of Nigella. I like her very much.
What do you like about her?
I attended her first wedding. Her first husband was a great friend of mine, John
Diamond. Oh, are you talking about John? What's his name?
John Diamond, yeah.
John Diamond. He died of cancer, didn't he?
Yes. He was a colleague of mine at U Magazine. And so I was invited to their wedding and they had their reception at the Groucho Club.
Yeah.
And she's a delightful person. I think that her cooking is reassuring to people.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about taste and it's all about indulgence, isn't it? And she did lose a lot of weight at one time. I think she's piling it back on a little bit, but who isn't?
Oh, I don't mind. I don't mind when Nigella puts a bit of weight on. I think she's a beautiful, curvaceous woman.
That's what most men think. So you know, all these women that are dieting down to be skinny minis, I think they're missing the point. I think men do like a little voluptuousness, and she's captured that. She's made that her own.
Yeah, but definitely.
I don't think that buttering toast on telly is really cooking.
Well, I thought it was intriguing to see her do it because toast is such a basic food. And I know exactly what she's saying, like you. I never put, I love real butter on toast, by the way. Most Frigidaires, like mine, have a tub of sort of pretend butter and a block of real butter. You know what I mean? I don't know
What's a Frigidaire, by the way?
The fridge, sorry. Yeah.
What is that, a brand name or something?
I think it was. I think that might have been the first fridge we ever got when I was a kid. It was a Frigidaire. I've remembered it ever since.
I've never heard that word in my life.
Yeah, Kelvinator was the name of the company who made it. They had a fridge factory on the Wirral near to where we lived. And whenever we drove to Liverpool to the football or when we were little kids to the pantomime, we passed the Kelvinator factory to where we got.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, yes, we did. Yeah.
It's behind you.
By the way, I don't claim to have come from poverty under any circumstances, but I was brought up in a house without a fridge. We didn't have a fridge. We had like a pantry, and the milk was kept outside in the winter to keep it cold and all this kind of stuff. I remember the first fridge being delivered into my house. How about that?
Well, you must be older than you look.
No, a lot of people didn't have fridges in the north of England in those days. It wasn't called. Where's the place where you put the food when you didn't have a fridge? It wasn't called the pantry. It was called
a larder. Or the back step.
Sorry?
The back step.
Back step, that's right, absolutely. And the larder. No, you're absolutely right. Just getting back to Nigella. So when she got married the first time to John Diamond, what was she then?
She was a writer on the Times or the Sunday Times. Right. They met over the water cooler. You know, it was one of those moments, or the photocopier or something.
Yeah.
And she started doing what the papers say on do you remember that, on Saturday afternoons?
Yes, I do, yeah.
On television. She started to appear on that.
And you had all sorts of pictures of Fleet Street in the opening and all that.
That's right,
yeah. Yeah, I remember, yeah.
She was a little bit wooden in those days, but she found her television personality.
Yes. Well, what an unlikely matching, because John Diamond wasn't exactly sort of Clark Gable, was he?
No, the opposite. And they were also politically, they were hundreds of miles apart.
Really? Yeah.
You know, her father was the Chancellor at the time.
Of course he was. I was going to talk about
Nigel Lawson. And John Diamond's parents were basically East End communists.
Yeah.
So it was a kind of match made, not quite in heaven, but. Yeah. Yeah, it was a successful marriage and they had a couple of kids. And I miss John. He was a great Fleet Street character.
Oh, I have enormous respect for him because the poor guy actually wrote about his demise. He wrote about dying. And I remember one in particular. He had cancer of the esophagus, didn't he?
I think it was, yeah. He wrote a book. I think it started out, he was writing a column each week.
Yeah.
Just kind of outlining what he was going through.
That's
and then
right.
compiled all those columns into a book. And I think there was a play based on the book as well.
Oh. Yeah, no, you're probably right. But I remember in one time he celebrated for hours because he'd managed to get a slice of apple down his throat, you know, for the first time in 6 weeks or something like that. And I thought, how courageous are you knowing that you're dying and writing about your own death? I couldn't work it out. Couldn't work out how he did it. But anyway.
Do you know what I always thought was weird? Because Nigella wasn't a cookery writer.
Yeah.
And she took up cookery writing in their home when her husband was dying of cancer and could no longer eat.
Golly. Maybe to like sort of make souffles for him or something, you know, something soft or something like that. Golly.
It's quite bizarre though, doesn't it? I always remember Jackie Stevens. You remember Jackie? TV columnist.
Yeah.
She always was saying, I can't stand the food. She was very Welsh. I can't stand the food around Nigella's. Yeah. I always go and have a takeaway before I go there.
Yeah. Oh, dear. What a horrible thing to say. Right. OK, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky, myself and, of course, Miss Jones. Miss Jones expressing some disapproval of some of the Fleet Street tactics, which we've all been involved in over the years. Talking about Fleet Street, Miss Jones, getting back to Jackie Stephen, right? What an adorable person Jackie Stephen is. We were, Mr. Brazil and I, Alan Brazil and I, were going to Cardiff on one occasion. We used to go to Cardiff a lot in those days because when Wembley was being knocked down, all the big matches, the England matches and the cup finals, were played at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, right? And as you will probably know, because your father would have probably gone to them. But anyway, we got on the train at Paddington, get into the first class, only one other person there, this tiny little woman with very short hair, surrounded by a load of what were videotapes in those days and playing something into her earphones. And I recognised her immediately because I was an avid reader of her TV column, and it was Jackie Stephens.
She's quite a character. Yeah, I remember bumping into her at one of the famous Mail on Sunday Christmas parties, must be about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And she'd just come up from Cardiff and she said, are you going up to the Groucho like this? So I said, yeah, I'm going there now. This was after the Mail on Sunday party.
Yeah.
She said, can you take my suitcase? And I had to get in a cab and take her suitcase because she was going on to a Doctor Who party at the Science Museum. And by the time she got to the Groucho, she was 18 sheets to the wind. She was absolutely shit-faced.
Family show, Miss Jones, come on.
Sorry, family show. She came in to the Groucho and because everyone's singing around the piano. And there at the front, warbling away like a kangaroo with a hernia, was Kate Moss.
Oh, yeah, really?
Jackie goes over and she goes, do you want to stop singing like this? And Kate Moss goes, no, I don't really, and carries on singing. Yeah. Jackie goes, I'm going to whack you one if you don't stop singing like this. So Kate carries on singing. The next thing, Jackie and Kate were on the floor brawling like a couple of old blokes in a fish market.
Did Jackie know this was the world's most famous and highest paid model?
Oh, yeah. You know, they were always in the Groucho in those days, sort of fixtures at the bar, you know. So they're having this big brawl and everybody's going, whack her, whack her, whack her. Like this all standing around joining in. Yeah. It was one of the best fights I've ever seen.
I bet it was. That's sensational. Well, when she came to Cardiff with us, we all started talking on the train and, of course, drinking loads. You know what I mean? Mr. Brazil.
Yeah. Of course, you never drink ever when you're on duty, do you, Michael?
Well, you know, it was a pause of 2.5 hours to get to Cardiff, you see. And Jackie got something. Anyway, so when we got there, I said to her, where are you staying? She said, oh, no, I've got a house in Cardiff. I said, oh, that's nice, isn't it? You know, what do? Do you sort of live there half the time and half time in London? Oh, no, I've got a house in Paris as well. What? Yeah, and I've got one in Rome. She had about four houses. And I think she had another one in America. And I said, hang on, do you own all these houses? She said, oh, yes. I said, do you rent them out? Oh, no, I like to be able to move around and live whichever house I want to. And I said, how did you afford them all? She said, I work a lot. I work 7 days a week. She was a remarkable woman. And anyway, when we got to Cardiff, instead of her going to her house, she said, do you mind if I string along and come with you? Because we're staying at the King David Hotel, which is the best hotel in Cardiff. And she came and she didn't have a swimming pool, but she said, oh, they've got a swimming pool. Come on, let's go and have a swim. I said, what do you mean? And she went swimming in her underwear in the swimming pool.
Oh. Yeah, well, she never wore much more than her underwear at all of these parties. So I suppose it wasn't that much of a leap. Yeah. But I always wondered about all these houses in different locations.
Did you actually have all these houses?
Well, no, she talked to me about that. She said she had a flat in New York and so on.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
think about it, she was on a columnist's salary.
That's what I could never work out.
I think there might have been less to it.
Yeah, I think there might have been less to it. I mean, look, I have more than one property, but I only live in two of them and the rest are all rented out. Because the other thing is, it's a bit of a bind having homes you don't live in, because they have to be heated and they have to be maintained and, you know what I mean, all that kind of stuff. I don't know how she... I couldn't have juggled all that like she did.
No, I think that take all that with a pinch of salt. I certainly know that the place she was living in Paris was rented.
Oh, right, OK. I wonder why you'd rent a... you see, why would you bother with that? I'd just go and get a good room at a hotel for the weekend, wouldn't you? But anyway.
Well, exactly, but I suppose it's about having your stuff there, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
And it's about impressing people. That's the bottom line.
You think so? Oh, I didn't sort of get that, really. I got that she was just a bit dippy, you know. Anyway, look, she's still alive, I take it, is she?
She was last time I saw her, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously. But I don't think she writes that column anymore in the Sunday paper, does she?
No, she doesn't. But I went into the Groucho, would have been last Christmas, wandered in to get some Christmas cards. I was on my way from a meeting with an agent.
Right.
Wandered in and she was sitting at the bar and she said, oh, you're going to have a Christmas drink with me? And so I sat down and, yeah, she started telling me all about the bloke she'd shagged the night before.
Oh, well, that never... I'm afraid I never got sort of into that sort of situation with Jackie. So maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe some company. Could be. Oh, well, never mind. Now, listen, Miss Jones, what is your attitude towards beggars? I ask you because I was coming home the other day and a chap got on the train and he did the usual, you know, delivered a sermon and all this kind of stuff. You know, I need somewhere to stay tonight. I need some food and all that. In the past, I've often pulled out a tenner or a fiver and just handed it over. You know what I mean? Really, I suppose, just because A, I felt sorry for the guy, but B, I felt uncomfortable in his company and wanted him to go away. So that's really a guilt complex. But when it happened this week, I didn't have any money on me because I haven't used money since lockdown because I think money carries germs. Coins and notes have been handled by other people. So I wasn't able to give him anything. What is your attitude to beggars? Would you have felt guilty like me for not being able to help him?
Always, because I have always dished out money to beggars and I've always bought the big issue. And of course, they don't take cards.
Yes.
So what do we do now? Because I'm like you, I'm not carrying money anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, how do we solve this one?
I don't know. I you see, if you had time and if you had the inclination, you'd go and buy them something like a sandwich and give it to them.
Oh, but I've done that before. Yeah, I've gone into Marks and Spencer and bought a packet of dog food for a guy outside sitting there with, you know, a little puppy. He says, have you got any money? And I go, no, I'm sorry. I could buy you something. So I actually went into the shop, bought a sandwich and a packet of dog food and gave them to him and then went back in to do my shopping.
Golly, that's very kindly, that is. They keep dogs to elicit sympathy, don't they?
I think so, and also to have company. I mean, who wants to hang around with a beggar?
Yeah, no, you could be right. No, I do feel sorry for them because a lot of them are drug addicts and they've got mental problems, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, most people just simply ignore them, don't they, and just don't say anything. But anyway, there we are. Now,
a lot of them are kids, by the way, and a lot of them are kids. And a lot of them have been kicked out of their homes during lockdown because their parents can't afford to live with them, or they just can't bear to live with them anymore.
Yeah.
So I always think that could be my child.
Well, yes, I suppose you're right. When you talk about kids, the only kids I've ever seen of beggars have been thieves. I've seen young kids who look like East European or Albanian or something literally run through a pub and snatch a couple of phones and run out again. And, you know, they're not the sort of beggars I would ever help, obviously.
No, I don't mean children, but I mean sort of teenagers, early 20s.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Those are the kind of people I regard as kids these days, because I've got three of them at home.
Yeah, well, of course you have, yes. And doing your maternal job, absolutely. How many times did you come across Kim Wilde?
Oh, I know Kim. Kim's a mate. Yeah. I'm very fond of Kim.
Right.
She's turned 60 this week, hasn't she?
Yeah, absolutely right. She turned 60. And I thought her first record, you know, it's the kids in America. Whoa.
Whoa.
It's the kids in America. Whoa.
Whoa.
it's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. And I thought it was a great record. But then there was another one about a bridge, which I can't remember. What was it?
Oh, don't remember that one. I remember, what do I remember? You Keep Me Hanging On.
You Keep Me Hanging On. That's a cover, though, from some years back.
Yeah, from one of those girl groups.
Hanging on, that's the Supremes or something.
Yeah, and then there was Cambodia, I remember. I can't remember the bridge one.
Wasn't it The View from the Bridge?
Oh, it might have been, yeah.
Yeah, View from the Bridge.
A long time ago, isn't it? She's great, Kim. I did some television with her about 10 years ago, and there's a great picture of us together. I'll have to dig it out.
Yeah.
In which we're comparing hands. And she's. Oh, yeah. I'm actually saying to her, you've got nicer hands than me.
Yes.
I'll have to find that. But her whole family, I mean, they're just such a showbiz family. Her mother, Joyce, was one of the Vernon's girls way back. One of those kind of... forming, it was a girl group, wasn't it? Sort of singing, dancing.
They were like the Tiller Girls, weren't they?
A little bit, yeah. And her father, of course, Marty Wilde, who, you know, isn't actually called Marty Wilde. He started life as Reginald Smith.
Right.
So Smith is the family name, not Wilde at all.
Yeah.
And then all the siblings, so Ricky, her brother, Roxanne, her sister, and Kim, they're all performers.
But aren't they producers as well? Doesn't her brother produce her records?
He has done, yes. Yeah. Do you remember that great bit of film that was on going around on the internet a few years ago? Kim and Ricky were on the tube or the train going back home to Radlett in Hertfordshire, where they live.
Right.
And Kim was drunk and she was singing all her hits and he was playing acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Have you never seen that? It's one of the funniest things. Oh, yeah, you should dig that out.
Did people think she was a Kim Wilde tribute act?
No, they knew it was her.
And they were
filming it with their phones and going, this is unbelievable, Kim Wilde singing on the train.
God, it's amazing.
She just went for it. She didn't care. But I absolutely love Kim. I have a lot of time for her. She comes to our rock and roll Scribblers lunches.
Lovely.
She's been a couple of times. And she mucks in, you know, she's down to earth. And no airs and graces. She is what she is.
I think she's. I think she does gardening or something these days. She does some TV program outdoors or something like that, even like on the farm or something. And she actually takes the mickey out of herself. You know, I bet you don't know I used to be Kim Wilde and all this kind of stuff, you know.
Oh, well, that's an advert that you've seen. It's a chocolate advert. Yeah, she did give up. She gave up pop for a while to do gardening and she had some gardening programs. Well, but her big success story is doing the summer festivals as a heritage act.
Oh, what's that mean?
Meaning that, you know, all those acts from the 80s,
all our yesteryear.
Captain Sensible and Mid-Year and
Simple
Minds and all them, they go out as a sort of heritage show.
Yeah.
And they're hugely well attended, those festivals.
A mate of mine, The Express, sadly he's no longer with us, got stomach cancer, but every year he loved going to Butlins in October for a week of 60s and 70s revival groups, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sugar baby love, sugar baby love, you know.
Who was that, Mud or someone?
No, it wasn't Mud. It was like Mud. Mud used to go to them. You're absolutely right. That's right, that's right, that's right. That Tiger Light, you know, and all that.
Tiger
kind of
Feet,
stuff.
Even.
Tiger Feet, that's right, yeah. and everybody in the office would mock him because, you know, he was a 55-year-old man, bald, and he used to go with a couple of mates. And, I mean, I would never have admitted to doing that if I did it, would you?
Well, no. I mean, I know a guy in the music industry who goes off for naturist weekends.
Oh, no.
And he's the least likely guy you would ever expect to go to one of those things and take all their clothes off.
Oh, they're perverts.
They are a little bit.
They are.
I think they are a little bit, yeah.
Walking around naked. I mean,
Starkers, absolutely stitch-free.
The only bodies that look good without clothes on are those who have the physique of Muhammad Ali or Sophia Loren at her best, you know what I mean? But anyway...
Yeah, you wouldn't want Sophia Loren now, would you?
Well, of course not. I said at her best, you know.
Tucking her nipples into her waistband.
Oh, dear me, Miss Jones. Honestly, are there no depths to which you'll sink, you know, your grossness? Goodness gracious me. No, and what I was going to say is the rest of us just, you know, do you know what? The rest of us shouldn't even stand in front of a mirror, let alone go out without clothes on. I just think they're, do you remember when we were children, little boys used to try and get hold of a copy of HE, Health and Efficiency, because it used to sell itself as the Naturist magazine, but it was just full of nude people. It was ridiculous. They used to sell
I've never even heard of HE.
Sorry?
Are you sure you haven't just made that up?
No, I'm telling you. Ask anybody of my generation. It was called HE, Health and Efficiency, and it was marketed by the Naturism Society of Great Britain or something and had pictures of people in nudist camps. But, of course, most of them were vile, you know what I mean? Most of them were fat, ugly, horrible, wrinkly. But it was the only place where, pubescent young boys could find pictures of naked women, even if the women were 80. It was revolting, believe me.
Isn't it interesting that girls never did anything like this?
Say again?
It's so interesting to me that girls never did anything like that.
You know, little girls should be sugar and spice and all things nice, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
Just getting back to the Wild Family for one moment, because I kept meaning to tell you, I went to Bill Kenwright's 60th birthday party. He's since had his 70th birthday party. I think Mr. Kenwright's 75 now. And it was all blue and white balloons because he's chairman of Everton Football Club. And just at the end, all of a sudden, somebody came up, said, OK, Bill, we've got a surprise for you now. The endearing, the one and the only. And Marty Wilde and his band rushed onto the stage and performed three or four numbers.
Oh, brilliant. I like the idea of that.
Bill and Marty were lifelong friends, you know?
Yeah, I saw Marty sing, the Sod's Night was last December, which is the Society of Distinguished Songwriters.
Oh, yes, yes.
And yeah, he got up on stage at that. And I think he's 80 now. He was just incredible.
Yeah, no.
I've got a lot of time for these guys who keep going.
Yeah. Listen, do you remember PJ Proby?
Yeah, with the ripped leather trousers.
Yes, yes. I read a feature on him this week. Somebody said, you know, it was one of those whatever happened to PJ Proby. And the true story is he was on stage, his trousers ripped. But I didn't realise. I thought his trousers had ripped to expose his underwear or something. His trousers only ripped across the knee. But nevertheless, Mary Whitehouse was the great campaigner in those days against filth on television. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, you may not remember Mary Whitehouse, but you might have heard of her in subsequent.
Yeah, I do remember her. Yeah, he got done for exposure for that.
Yes, that's right. But it was only his knees. That's what I couldn't understand.
I think a bit of his crotch might have crept out.
Oh, yeah, I suppose you're right. Yeah, I suppose it might have gone up from the knee, maybe. Yeah, you could be right, yeah. But anyway, ended his career because then he was branded a sort of pervert and everybody said he must have done it deliberately. He had the stitching in his trousers weakened, you know, so that when he twisted, they would burst open. But there's a conspiracy theory, and that is that he was touring with Cilla Black at the time, and that a guy called Gordon Mills, I think, was the super agent who controlled Engelbert Humperdinck, who we talked about the other day, and Tom Jones. And he wanted to get rid of PJ Proby and get Tom Jones on the bill with Cilla Black, who was a huge star at the time. So the theory is that it was Gordon Mills who loosened his trousers to try and get him banned.
Well, we'll never know, will we? Because Gordon Mills isn't around to ask.
No, he isn't, is he? Have you ever heard of a woman called Mrs. Hinch who's made herself £2 million from going on Instagram and showing people how to polish their silverware in their homes?
Oh, yeah, she's made a fortune. It is interesting because she's copied almost exactly those tips, household tips, that were given by Kim and Aggie. Do you remember them?
Yes. Well, I never watched them, but I know of them, yes.
Yeah, so they were, I still use quite a lot of their tips that they gave. I've got a book of theirs somewhere. Things like how to clean your microwave oven.
Yeah.
You just put half a lemon, the flat side up, in a teacup of boiling water.
Yes.
Stick it in the microwave, put it on for 5 minutes.
Yes.
That loosens all the muck inside your microwave, and then you just wipe it down with kitchen towel. That's one of Kim and Aggie's, but Mrs. Hinch is purveying all these kinds of tips.
Really?
I think it's a little bit unfair. This is just repackaging for the online market.
Golly, I think all is fair in love and making money, to be honest. And if she's making herself a couple of million quid, she's very attractive as well. Seen a picture of her here, and described as the Instagram sensation. You see, that I believe in this life, you've got to come up with a good idea, right? But B, somebody's got to actually kick that idea forward and launch it into space. Do you see what I mean? You know, so many people have ideas which never get anywhere.
I think the secret with Mrs. Hinch is that she looks like a bit like a Page Three model. You know, she's blonde, tons of makeup, manicured. Yeah. So she doesn't look like a Mrs. Mop, somebody who's down on her hands and knees scrubbing floors.
You could well
she's
be
very
right.
glamorous. So it's that juxtaposition of glamour yeah. and hard housework, which yeah. I think people have bought.
Yeah, well, no, you may be absolutely right. Now, Leslie Ann, I have been reading over the last couple of days The Demise of the Black Cab. There's a field somewhere in Essex with 400 black cabs parked in it because simply there is no work for them during lockdown. The City of London, as we've mentioned before on this podcast, is literally like a graveyard day in, day out. Walk up for Cheapside from St. Paul's into the city, there's nobody there. And of course, that would have been where most of their work came from for those in the City of London. I remember black cabs, Leslie Ann, with so much affection, so many late night get out of jail free card because a black cab suddenly turned up.
Oh, it's tragic, this. And the saddest part about it is that, you know, the field, those pictures you described,
yeah.
those are all leased cabs.
Yeah.
And those cab drivers are having to still pay for them, even yeah. though they haven't got them on the road anymore.
Yeah.
And their livelihood is slashed.
Yes.
I feel sorry for anybody whose livelihood is threatened or lost by the pandemic.
Yeah.
But I can't see black cab drivers coming back because they were threatened by Uber in the beginning, yeah. which is what all their protests around London,
yes.
snarling up Trafalgar Square and so on, were
yeah.
about.
Mm.
Mm. And they were being told to go online. Lots of the old school elderly drivers were saying, well, I don't want to go online.
Right.
But the fact is, you have to move with the times.
Yeah. A friend of mine, her dad has been a black cab driver all his life. He's now 80. And until lockdown in March, he still went out for a couple of hours a day because it becomes a vocation for them. You know what I mean? And they stop at these little huts that they have all over the place and they have breakfast together and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? He now doesn't bother because there's nobody out there. He can't, you know, he can't even get back the money for the petrol he's put in the van. But also, the authorities in cities like London were making it more and more difficult for the black cab by restricting road space to cycle lanes and bus lanes and all that kind of stuff. And they wanted to push the black cab out of existence because they thought, well, they've got diesel engines, let's get rid of them. It's an absolute travesty.
It is sad, but the other aspect of this is that, you know, they have to move with the times.
Yeah.
And also, cab fares are very expensive.
Yeah, I agree.
Compared to other forms of transport.
Yeah.
So if you can get an Uber for a third of the price of a black cab, you're mad if you don't take the Uber.
Well, you see, you're absolutely right there because, and I've got a perfect example. Yesterday, I had to go and get some new recording equipment, okay? And I had to go and go down and get it tested and test it and then bring it back. Now, interestingly, down here in Stockbroker Belt, sorry, I walk to the local station and I jump into a black cab, okay, because I knew that we would have a small glass of red wine whilst we were sorting out the equipment that I needed, okay, because that's the sort of business it is. So I get down there and there's £18.40 on the clock and I gave the guy £22, okay, because I knew they would only take cash. I'd taken some cash out of the cash machine. Well, I didn't know they'd just take cash, but I always...
No, they all take cards now, black cabs.
Well, I wanted to give them cash anyway because I thought, well, if I want to give them a tip, I don't know where the tip goes, you know what I mean? So I deliberately got £50 out of the cash machine at the station to use for the cab going down there. Now then, at the end, about 2 hours later, when I was all ready and I was hauling, you know, two bits of equipment, a laptop and another bit of equipment, I said, I need a local cab company. And they said, no, we don't have one. We use Uber. Now, the thing is, you can only use Uber if you've got an Uber account, can't you?
Yes.
Yes. So I didn't have an Uber account. I said, no, don't worry. You use ours. I said, that's very kind of you. Thank you. And I offered to pay the guy when I got back. He said, no. Oh, I said, yes, sorry, I forgot. I said, how much is it anyway? Just so I know for my friend. He said, £7.40. It was
exactly.
Almost one third, you're absolutely right, of the cost the other way in a black cab.
Yeah. So I can't see them bringing their business into now, post-lockdown.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to revive black cab drivers as an industry until they get real
yeah.
about what it costs to get around these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that people aren't prepared to pay those prices anymore.
No. But golly, I remember being saved in Fleet Street many a time when, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, thrown out of a lock-in in a pub, nothing about, trains all gone, and then the distant sound of the diesel engine of a black cab, the lights there, then having to pay the guy 50 or 60 quid to get him to take you home. You know what I mean?
We've all been there. But what about the journalists who used to throw up in the back of cabs?
Oh, no. Who was that?
Oh, God, I could give you a list.
Oh, really? Oh, I never did.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Oh, God, no, thank you. Anyway, there we are. So, Miss Jones, it's the end of another Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for having joined me. I hope you have a good and fruitful week or days of work and leisure before we meet again.
Same to you, Michael.
Indeed.
Sorry, I always found it disgusting that truck drivers were ogling over naked 18-year-olds. Every one of those 18-year-olds is somebody's daughter. Yeah. You know, those truck drivers have daughters. Do they ogle over their own daughters? Surely we should be dragging those Neanderthals into the 21st century.
Yeah, I can
and
see
dissuading them from getting their kicks out of looking at pictures of naked teenagers. I think it's disgraceful.
Well, they weren't all teenagers. Some of them were in their sort of early 20s. I mean,
well, it's the same thing, isn't it? They're still somebody's daughter, somebody's granddaughter.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, I'm not going to defend it because I sound like you say, a dinosauric sort of old perv, which I'm not.
You do a bit, yeah.
Sorry?
You do a bit.
No, that's horrible. That's horrible to say that. I know exactly what you're saying, like you. I love real butter on toast, by the way. Most frigidaires, like mine, have a tub of sort of pretend butter and a block of real butter, you know what I mean? I don't know
what's
if you're...
What's a frigidaire, by the way?
The fridge, sorry, yeah.
What is that, a brand name or something?
I think it was. I think that might have been the first fridge we ever got when I was a kid. It was a Frigidaire. I've remembered it ever since. The only bodies that look good without clothes on are those who have the physique of Muhammad Ali or Sophia Loren at her best. You know what I mean? But
You wouldn't want Sophia Loren now, would you?
Well, of course not. I said at her best, you know.
Tucking her nipples into her waistband.
Oh, dear me, Miss Jones. Honestly, are there no depths to which you'll sink, you know, your grossness? Goodness gracious me.